Canto 3, Chapter 28. Kapila's Instructions on the Execution of Devotional Service. The Supreme Lord said, O Royal Daughter, I will now describe the characteristics of the yoga system, the object of which is to restrain the mind by following the regulative principles so that one filled with joy may tread the path of the Absolute Truth. One must perform one's duties to the best of one's ability and avoid everything contrary to this. One should be satisfied with whatever is achieved by the grace of the Lord and worship the feet of a self-realized soul, a spiritual master. One should desist from civil materialistic practices and take pleasure in duties leading to liberation. One must also eat little and pure vegetarian food. Always live in seclusion and be a servant of peace. Non-violent, truthful, free from unrighteous acquisition, and not possessing more than one needs, one should, in celibacy, austerity and cleanliness, studying the Vedas, exercise respect for the appearance of the original personality. Observing silence and acquiring steadiness in control of yoga postures and one's breath, one should gradually withdraw from the objects of the senses and direct one's mind to the heart. One finds oneself absorbed or in samadhi when one either fixes one's mind and prana on one of the six chakras or energy nodes, or when one focuses one's mind on the pastimes of the Lord of Vaikuntha. With these and other methods of yoga, attentively engaging one's intelligence and controlling one's breathing, the mind, which is contaminated by material enjoyment, must be gradually subdued. In control of the yoga asanas, one should do this by preparing a seat in a sanctified spot and sit there straight up in a comfortable posture. For the mind to become steady and free from distractions, one should clear the passage of the life breath or prana by inhaling, holding one's breath and exhaling again, or the other way around. The mind of the yogi, who is of such a self-control, is soon free from disturbances, just like gold that, put in fire and fanned with air, is quickly freed from contaminations. By means of breath control, one eradicates contaminations. By turning inward, material association recedes. By focusing the mind, sin is overcome. And by meditation, one rises above the power of the modes of nature. When one's thinking is purified and controlled by the practice of yoga, one should, while looking at the tip of one's nose, meditate on the goal of the Supreme Lord. With his club, conch and discus in his hands, with ruddy eyes resembling the interior of a lotus and a dark complexion like the petals of a blue lotus, he has a cheerful, lotus-like countenance. Clad in silken garments as yellow as the filaments of a lotus, he has the mark of Sri Vatsa on his chest and wears the brilliant Kastuba jewel around his neck. There is a garland of forest flowers humming with intoxicated bees, a priceless necklace, and also bracelets, a crown, armlets, anklets, and a girdle of the finest quality around his waist. He who has his seat in the lotus of the heart is most charming to behold, a feast to the eyes with a serenity that gladdens the mind and the heart. He is always very beautiful to see, worshipable to all people of all places, as youthful as a boy and eager to bestow his blessings upon those who serve him. His fame, adding to the repute of the devotees, is worth singing. One should meditate on the Godhead and all his limbs until one's mind stops wandering. One should visualize the beneficial acts of the beautiful pastimes of him standing, moving, sitting and lying down or dwelling in the heart. He who contemplates him should, when he with his mind fixed on the one form distinguishes all his limbs, In his concentration, attend to each and every part of the Lord separately. One should meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord that are adorned with the marks of the thunderbolt, the goad, the banner, and the lotus, as also on the prominence of the brilliant red nails with the splendor of the crescent moon that dispel the thick darkness of the heart. One should meditate on the Lord's lotus feet for a long time, for the holy water of the Ganges that washed down from his feet blessed Lord Shiva, who bore it on his head. They became a thunderbolt that was hurled at the mountain of sin present in the mind of the meditator. One should meditate in one's heart on the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, the lotus-eyed mother of the entire universe created by Brahma. She, with her caring fingers, massages the lower legs of the Almighty Lord, transcendental to material existence, is worshipped by all God-conscious souls. Then follow his two beautiful legs on the shoulders of Garuda, that, extending down with the luster of the whitish-blue linseed flower, are the storehouse of all energy, with around his hips the girdle over the exquisite yellow cloth. Next, one meditates on the expanse of his navel, that is the foundation of all the worlds situated in his abdomen. From that navel, the lotus, the residence of the self-born one, Lord Brahma, sprang up, containing all the planetary systems. One should meditate on the two most delicate nipples of the Lord that are like emeralds in the whitish light of the pearls from his necklace. The chest of the Lord of Wisdom, which is the abode of Mahalakshmi, bestows on the minds and eyes of persons all the transcendental pleasure. One should next direct one's mind to meditate on the neck of the one adored throughout the universe that enhances the beauty of the Kaustubha jewel. One should also meditate on his arms, from which the controllers of the universe originated and of which the ornaments were polished by the revolving of Mount Mandara, as well as on the dazzling luster of the Sudarshana discus with its thousand spokes, and the swan-like conch in the lotus hand of the Lord. One should remember the Supreme Lord's mace that is named Kaumudaki and is very dear to him, smeared as it is with the bloodstains of the soldiers of the enemy. And also attention should be paid to the garland humming with the sound of the bees around it, and the necklace of pearls about his neck that represents the principle of the pure living entity. One should meditate on the lotus-like countenance of the Supreme Lord, who assumed his different forms in this world out of compassion for the devotees, and on his glittering alligator-shaped earrings that, oscillating, crystal-clear illumine his prominent nose and his cheeks. Then one should attentively meditate in one's mind's eye the elegance of his face adorned with an abundance of curly hair, and his lotus eyes and dancing eyebrows that put to shame a lotus surrounded by bees and a pair of swimming fish. He who has a heart full of devotion for long should meditate on the frequent compassionate glances of his eyes, for these glances, which are accompanied by the abundance of his graceful, loving smiles, soothe the three fearful agonies as caused by oneself, by others, and by material nature. The most benevolent smile of the Lord, which dries up the ocean of tears of all persons who in their grief bowed before him, must be meditated, as also his arched eyebrows, for they were for all sages by his internal creative potency manifested to bewilder the god of sexuality. Easy to meditate is the generous laughter of his lips, revealing the splendor of his small teeth that are like a row of jasmine buds. With devotion steeped in love for him, fixing one's mind, and not wishing to see anyone else, one should meditate on him, Lord Vishnu, who resides in the core of one's heart. Because of the pure love one thus through devotion has developed towards Hari, the Supreme Lord, one's heart melts, and therefrom one constantly experiences that one's hairs stand on end out of extreme joy, and that there is a flow of tears out of intense love. In that state, the mind, like a fish on a hook, gradually gives up. The moment the mind is situated in the liberated position, it immediately turns indifferent and dies away with one's detachment from the sense objects. The person of such a mind at that time, just like a flame, is no longer separated from the big fire of the supersoul and experiences oneness in freedom from the interaction of the operating modes of nature. When he is situated in his ultimate glory because of the cessation of the mind that responds to material impulses, he, on top of that, in his position of transcendence above happiness and distress, sees that indeed the cause of pleasure and pain is found in the ignorance of falsely identifying oneself in ego. In that ego he attributed to himself what now is realized by the form and measure of time of the supersoul, the localized aspect of the Lord. As for the body, the perfected soul has, because he achieved his predestined real identity, Svarupa, no notion of not continuing physically, or that he would remain or again take birth, just as it is with someone who, blinded by intoxication, fails to realize whether he has any clothes on or not. Thus one is faced with the activities one undertook with one's body that by divine ordinance will continue for as long as it takes. One is then, because of one's yoga, situated in self-absorption, the state of consciousness in which he, who awakened to his constitutional position, no longer gives priority to or worships the body with its sensuality and byproducts that was born like in a dream. The way a mortal man is understood as being different from his son and wealth, irrespective of his natural inclination for them, so too a person in his original nature differs from his body, senses, mind and such, irrespective of his identification with them. It is like with a fire that differs from its flames, sparks and smoke, although they by nature, being produced by itself, are intimately associated with it. The elements, the senses, the mind and the primary nature of the individual soul, the same way differs from the seer, who is the Supreme Lord, who is known as the spiritual complete, Brahman. The way one, with an equal mind, sees all creatures as being part of the same natural order, one should also see the soul as being present in all manifestations and all manifestations in the soul. Just like the one fire manifests itself in different types of wood, so too, the one spiritual soul, in its position in material nature, knows different births under different natural conditions. When one thus has conquered one's own difficult-to-comprehend, bewildering divine material energy that is both cause and effect, one is situated in the position of self-realization, in one's Svarupa.